Remember Pearl Harbor. Keep them rolling. The War Production Board, in cooperation with WOR and Mutual, presents the 23rd in this weekly series of programs of entertainment and information about America's United War Effort. Your master of ceremonies is one of the most distinguished figures of the contemporary theater, the well-known author and playwright, George S. Kaufman.
For many weeks on this program, we have emphasized the importance of production and more production to put the vital implements of war into the hands of our fighting forces all over the world. Tonight, we dedicate our program to a vastly indispensable branch of those fighting forces, the United States Navy. As our special guest of honor, we have with us Lieutenant Commander Albert F. Rice, USNR, of whom more later. Also here to take part in our dedication to the Navy are such gifted exponents of the free spirit as
one of Hollywood's brightest and most popular stars, Myrna Loy. The distinguished star of stage and screen, Otto Kruger. The celebrated American baritone, Conrad Thiebaud.
As well as radio's talented young composer-conductor, Morton Gould, who leads his orchestra with chorus and a brisk salute to the aviation cadets of the Navy of today, written by Lieutenant William Neblett of the Naval Air Service.
Over the fire, over the sea, the cadets of the Navy.
Guarding our country shoreline, our ships from afar.
For the sea,
cast a steaming with great men of war. Screened by Greyhound destroyers, ready for what they may beat. Navy planes roar over the eyes of the fleet. Aviation cadets of the Navy man the flying ships that sail on high.
Sail on high.
They wake to hear the bugle sounding off. You've got to get up,
you've got to get up
and fly.
Mess
up the ranks for your squadrons in the nation's proud and anxious eye. For the Navy is the first line of defense of the or in the sky. We're the men, we're the men. Give her the gun, second to none.
We are the dooming fighting airmen of the sea.
Oh, we are as proud as the eagle, and we fly on wings that never fall.
Oh, we love the navy blue, and like it best when wearing wings of gold.
That was the official song of the Naval Aviation Cadets, sung by Conrad Thiebaud. And now, what about the cadets themselves? How are they chosen? What do they do? How are they helping to win the war? The best man to answer these questions and many other similar questions is a formal naval aviator who is now senior member of the Naval Aviation Cadet Selection Board, 3rd Naval District, which takes in all of New York, Connecticut, Northern Jersey. He is here to tell us something about these supermen of the air, Lieutenant Commander Albert F. Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman, but let me say right here and now that Naval Aviation Cadets are not supermen.
Possibly not, Commander, but I, for one, would certainly call Jack Newkirk, Lieutenant Edward O'Hare, something that approximates flying supermen.
Well, perhaps they turned out to be that, Mr. Kaufman, but when we enroll a cadet, We choose him because he is a normal, healthy American boy who would rather fly than eat. In my opinion, that is one of the two most important requirements. His love for the Navy and his desire to fly.
And the other requirements?
They're very simple. Applicants should be American citizens between the ages of 19 and 26. Be unmarried, have at least 2 years of college credits. You see, we like to dispel the idea that a great many young men have today, and that is that it is difficult to become an aviation cadet.
Well, let us suppose, Commander, that I was between 19 and 26, which I am not, but I had 2 years of college, which I didn't, and that I was a red-blooded young American. Now, how do I go about enlisting?
You would report to the nearest Navy recruiting station or substation, where you would present your documentary evidence of education and submit to a preliminary physical examination.
Very well, then. Now, with a bit more wishful thinking, I have passed my examination. Where do I go now?
First stop, Floyd Bennett Field. For 2 months of elimination flight training, including dual instruction in the air and 12 hours of solo.
Well, by that time, I ought to be pretty good.
Good enough to be transferred to one of our southern bases for advanced flight training. That's where your real work starts. That's where you really learn how to fly and to fight. And when your training is finished, you will be eligible for the commission of ensign in the Naval Reserve and your Navy wings of gold.
And what are my chances, Commander, of successfully completing all this training and not, as they call it, being washed out?
Your chances are good. 5-1, as a matter of fact. And for this reason, our job at the selection board is to handpick the men, to be as certain as possible they don't wash out. You see, we can't afford to waste $25,000.
You mean that it costs $25,000 to train one cadet?
Yes, Mr. Kaufman. It's the most expensive scholarship in the world. And without any doubt, it's the best training in the world. And when a cadet gets his wings at Pensacola, he becomes, in effect, a one-man Navy. He takes off from his aircraft carrier in a fighter plane alone. He is his own pilot, his own navigator, his own radio man, his own machine gunner. And when his mission is accomplished, he must find his way back to his ship, which may now be an entirely different place from where he left it.
Then I take it that by the time I have my wings, I'd have become a really expert airman.
You certainly would. And you'd have some other very valuable assets, too.
Obviously, then, Commander, your advice to all young men is to avail themselves of these advantages now and help their country at the same time.
Yes, definitely. Because it is my belief that this war will be won in the air. We've got to turn out the planes, but the Navy needs 30,000 new men this year to fly them. Let's imagine for a moment that this war is a gigantic football game with civilization as the stake. The airplanes are the line. What we need are 30,000 more triple threat men this year to carry the ball.
You have given us, Commander, an extremely valuable and clear insight into the workings of naval aviation.
Thank you and good night. That is the Navy as it is, and as it will continue to be, with compound interest. But now Morton Gould leads the orchestra in a medley of traditional sailors' songs that tell of the Navy as it was, when the wind went through the rigging at 15 knots instead of 400 miles an hour.
and getting madder and madder because he wasn't at the sea blasting the enemy. Then one winter evening, a blizzard clamps down on New York. Only two men would have the nerve to take a warship past the British blockade in a blizzard. And the other one was Captain Blockade in a blizzard. And the other one was Captain Josiah Peabody. Yes, sir. It was the worst storm.
Over. 9 knots. 9 1/2.
Keep an eye for the British patrol. Set the mizzen topsail and jib again. We're clear. Head for the open sea. Well, sonny, one frigate couldn't fight the entire British Navy. But what that vessel didn't do to the British trade ships...
Yeah, but Gramps, where does the girl come in?
Now, will you wait, boy? Be patient. One day, a strange man of war appears and Captain Peabody hails her. But she don't pay no attention. And Peabody fires a shot across her bow. The sloop came about then, all right. And Captain Peabody came aboard. A sort of fattish officer meets him on deck of a strange sloop.
What money you got there?
I am Captain Nicolas Dupont of His Most Christian Majesty's sloop Tigre.
Captain Joseph Peabody, United States ship Delaware.
And why, sir, did you fire for me?
Why didn't you show your colors and stop?
Those are our colors, monsieur.
Well, they're not familiar?
Sure. It's the flag of His Majesty Louis, King of France or Navarre.
The King of France? The King, did you say?
But of course. Napoleon has fallen. Louis the 18th is king. And we have made peace with England. Monsieur, you fired upon a neutral ship.
Well, my humblest apologies, sir.
Yes, you know more about it. I should like to introduce you to my passengers. Your Excellency, I present Captain Josiah Peabody of the United States Navy.
Yes,
His Excellency, the Marquis de Saint-Amand de Bois, Governor of Martinique.
It is a pleasure to meet you, Captain. It would be a further pleasure to present you to my daughter, Mademoiselle de Villebois.
Captain Peabody.
Your servant, ma'am.
I hope you're planning to visit us at Fort de France in Martinique.
Mademoiselle, you see,
We'll be looking for your ship in the bay someday. You must promise to visit us.
Well, sonny, from that minute on, Captain Josiah Peabody was sunk. All he could think of in his spare time was a pair of blue eyes and brown curls. Then one day, three British warships caught up with the Delaware and chased it very convenient into the bay at Martinique. Yes, sir. Peabody is getting set to run the blockade with guns wide open when all of a sudden... the Tigress comes booming out under full sail and drops anchor between the contending warships. Like that. The Marquis invites both captains aboard the ship.
Captain Peabody, Captain Devenant, as a neutral power, France cannot permit fighting within our territorial waters. Further, you cannot leave these waters within 24 hours of each other. That is the law.
But confound it, sir.
We shall fire on any vessel disobeying my instructions.
Peabody, you ran in here purposely, confound you.
I did not, and confound you, sir.
Gentlemen. Gentlemen.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Your pardon, ma'am. But what endeavorment are we to do?
Why not drop anchor here tonight? Give us our chance to repay the hospitality we've received in America.
Well,
And England.
Shall we say tonight, at 8?
Dancing, Father.
Huh? Oh, to be sure, dancing. Bring your officers, gentlemen.
Can waltz, Captain Peabody?
Well, I'm very sorry, ma'am. Mademoiselle.
Oh, no, that's good. I wanted to go outside anyhow.
Lovely night.
But not for war. Just think. Your ship might have been at the bottom of the bay by now. Your ship... Why do England and America fight?
Reasons. The reasons wouldn't have been strong enough. We'd been prepared. Congress wanted to save money. No navy. We need a fleet. In a world like this, it takes force to prevent force. 12 two-deckers of 72 guns each would have prevented this war. I hope to heaven that America never lets herself be so weak again. Never. Never.
So do I. I was born in America, but I've lived in England. And I can see America and England as friends, with great fleets on the oceans. What did you say, Josiah?
Ma'am, I was just listening and looking at you.
Do you believe what you hear?
I believe what I see.
Captain Peabody, sir. Your pardon, ma'am.
This looks official. I'll go. Good night, Captain.
Good night.
Lieutenant.
Night, ma'am. Captain Peabody, I thought that if we might slip away while the English were dancing...
Exactly, Hubbard, exactly. Take the others and ready the ship. I'll stay to avoid suspicion. Meet you at the landing in 1 hour. On the double now. Hurry!
Josiah! Captain Peabody! Captain Peabody! Oh, Josiah.
Anne, what are you doing here?
Oh, I knew you'd be up to this. Josiah, you mustn't go away like this. Captain Davenant will miss you. He'll follow you. You'll fight. You'll lose your only ship.
Well, better to go down fighting than to rot in port.
I can't keep you here.
Well, you mustn't try. Now, please.
Very well. I shan't. But if you try to escape, the guns of the fort will sink you. I shall warn them.
You wouldn't.
I should have to.
Oh, well, I can't quarrel with the guns. All right, I'll stay.
Because you fear the guns?
Yeah. No, because... Oh, for many reasons. Come on.
I tell you, Your Excellency, this situation is ridiculous and impossible. When can we leave here?
I cannot stop your leaving here, but I can and will stop your leaving within 24 hours of each other.
But you realize, Your Excellency, that while my free ships lie idle, pirates are looting and plundering all over the West Indies? Allow me to go after them.
Oh, why, that tub of Calypso couldn't catch a schooner. Come on, let me go.
Conscionable, unscrupulous, scurrilous.
Wait. Why don't you both go?
Yeah, but me first.
Absolutely not. I'll go first.
Why not go out together?
Together?
With the understanding that they'll return.
Oh.
Word of honor. Father?
I agree, if the two gentlemen ever can.
No, Devonar, how does that sit with you?
I agree.
Good, good.
Goodbye, Josiah.
Goodbye.
Good luck to both of you. This is the way England and America were meant to fight. Together.
Yes, ma'am.
Good luck again. Come, Father. Leave them to their plans.
Well, sir?
No one said anything about what we might decide to do once we get outside of French waters, did they?
No, sir, they did not.
Good.
Father, what seems to be the trouble out there?
The Calypso and the Delaware are maneuvering most strangely, almost as if... Ah, those bloodthirsty idiots.
Broadside, they're fighting. They must be. Not now.
Captain Dubon, will they shot across their bows? Trap on every stitch of sail you've got, but quickly!
You had no right to come between our vessels, sir.
This was strictly a gentleman's quarrel, Your Excellency.
Gentlemen, indeed. Pack of barbarians.
You evaded the spirit of our agreement.
War, sir, is war.
Except for one very important consideration, Captain Josiah Peabody of the Delaware. There is no war.
What? No war?
A dispatch boat arrived just after you left. America and England have made peace.
Peace?
There are other things now for great peoples to do besides fight each other. The seas are full of pirates. For the good of all men, fight them and fight them together.
What's this?
What are they firing for?
I raise signal flags to your ships. They know the war is over.
They're saluting each other. The Delaware and the Calypso. America and England.
Captain Davenant and Captain Peabody, they shook hands and wasn't mad at each other no more.
Well, is that all there is to the story?
Heck no. Anne and Josiah, they got married and lived happily ever after. Don't they always? You needn't wrinkle your little nose either. Weren't for them, you wouldn't be here at all.
But, Gramps, if that was the War of 1812, how could you be in the War of 1812?
Come on now, you mustn't doubt your grandpa's word. Get to bed. Get to bed.
All masts, rooted in sturdy hulls of other days, are remembered again as Conrad Thiebaud sings John Masefield's Sea Fever, set to music by John Ireland, Mr. Thiebaud.
I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky. And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. And the wheels shake and the wheels fall, and the white sails shaking, and a gray mist on the sea's face, and a great dawn breaks. Must go down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying, and the flung spray and the blow. And the seagulls crying. I must go down to the seas again, to the vagrant clouds here high, down to the gulls where the whales wait, where the winds like a weather deny. And a laughing
Next week at this time, we will be back with another All-Star Half Hour dedicated to what we in these United States are fighting for and why. Until then, this is George S. Kaufman reminding you to remember Pearl Harbor, and now, more than ever before, to keep 'em rolling. This entire program was produced and directed by Arthur Curlen of the radio section of the War Production Board. Continuity was written by Milton Geiger, Martin Gosch, and Howard Harris. The War Production Board wishes to thank Station WOR and Mutual for furnishing the time and facilities to make this evening's broadcast possible. And also George S. Kaufman, Morton Gould, Myrna Loy, Otto Kruger, Conrad Thiebaud, and Lieutenant Commander Albert F. Wright for contributing their services tonight. We also wish to thank the Hollywood Victory Committee for Miss Myrna Loy's appearance. Frank Dunn announcing. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.